26, 2018 in Muscat, Oman.
Well, you can ask something about kids, but if you're just going to say something general, like how to raise kids, that's a seminar. I have actually two seminars on that. So better you go online and see those. They're an hour and a half seminars. If you have a specific question on kids or whatever, you ask, but it should be specific. Do you understand? In brief, if you always want to be enthusiastic. See, there's a letter that Prabhupada wrote to Jayapataka Maharaj in 1972. The secret of surrendering to Krishna is that Krishna has a plan, whatever is meant to be, I am doing that. Let me do it with full attention to every detail. Let me be absorbed in that service no matter what it is, and let all other considerations be forgotten, and let me do it for Krishna's alone pleasure be my motive. Those are the four components to always being enthusiastic.
But is it possible for knowledge, whatever activities you perform, irrespective of if it is for example, most of the activities we do, or I would say 99.9% of the activities we perform is not for Krishna's pleasure. For example, if you...
That's a lot of percentage.
So, how do we really understand that, okay, I'm driving the car, I'm going to office, I'm working, all this is actually for Krishna's pleasure. How do I bring that into, okay, it's easy for me to, when I'm chanting or I'm doing the devotional service, it's very easy for me to understand that it's for the Krishna's pleasure.
And hopefully you do that chanting more than 0.1% of the time, but okay.
Yeah. So how do we train ourselves to be like that, in that consciousness?
Again, this is my whole series of seminars on this topic. So I would suggest to go to YouTube and look up Anila Devi Dasi, the interview.
Interview.
I cannot right now in 5-10 minutes give you 5 hours worth of seminar. But those four things are very useful. Whatever's meant to be, I'm doing that. I'm always in the right, if I'm Krishna's devotee. Krishna always has me in the right place at the right time with the right people. Pay attention to the details. Forget about everything else, just focus on what you're doing at that moment and do it to please Krishna.
So is it something like, you know, there is a lot of talk which people talk about right now, is to be in the present moment.
Yes, very much. That's part of it. Very much, yes. A lot of what Prabhupada's saying in that letter is very much connected to the idea of present moment awareness and mindfulness, yes. There's a big overlap.
But that's mostly a Buddhist...
Well, because they're not doing it for Krishna's pleasure, but it's not that the Buddhists don't know anything. Truth is truth. That being absorbed in the present moment as being, you know, with it... I mean, two parts of that instruction, maybe three... are really concerned with present moment consciousness. One Prabhupada said, everything is part of Krishna's plan, whatever is meant to be, I am doing that. That's very much a present moment consciousness. That at this moment, I am in the right place at the right time with the right people. Rather than being in anxiety about what I did yesterday or what I'm going to do tomorrow. Let me do it with full attention, every detail. Okay, there's some amount of present moment consciousness. But then let me, you know, the word exactly. So like, let me become absorbed in what I'm doing and let all other considerations be forgotten. Never mind what I'm doing. I could find, if I have, get my phone and I'll read you the letter exactly.
Attention to the details.
Prabhupada's point, but yeah.
Okay. So attention to details is actually... Is devotion like
okay? You've got all four parts. Why pick one? Take it as a holistic instruction. Prabhupada's giving this letter, where he's giving four instructions. Okay, so this is a letter to Jayapataka Swami. Bombay, 19th December, 1972. C secret of surrendering to Krishna. Such surrendered devotee sees that everything is part of Krishna's plan. That whatever is meant to be, I am doing that. So this is the first thing. Everything is part of Krishna's plan. Whatever is meant to be, I am doing that. Which, yeah, of course the New Age people say something very similar. That we're always in the right place, that everything's perfect. It's not that every other group gets everything wrong and we're the only ones who gets everything right. That's ridiculous. Many other people get things right. Now, if you're not in a spiritual process, if you're not doing any kind of spiritual sadhana, then you're always in the right place in the right time according to karma. If you're in a spiritual sadhana, you're always in the right place and the right time according to Krishna's direct intervention. But everybody's always in the right place at the right time. So whatever's meant to be, I'm doing that. So that not to always be thinking, or ever be thinking, oh, you know, first I need to have a different situation and then I will be Krishna conscious. That's a very Rajagun way of thinking. Let me be Krishna conscious in this moment. In this moment, here I am in Oman with you in this living room. Whatever is meant to be, I am doing that. I'm taking it that Krishna wants me to be here with you particular jivas at this particular time in this particular place. So we accept, Prabhupada's talking about surrender. So we accept that. Not surrender is you're resisting that. You're thinking, I'd rather be doing someplace, something else, some other place. That's a lack of surrender. Wherever I am, that's the perfect place. Now sometimes, now we'll get to that. Okay. So let me do it with my full attention to every detail. So that's the next thing, to pay attention to the details. So if I'm here in Oman speaking to you, I'm going to pay attention. Are you comfortable? Like, you don't look very comfortable. But if I told you to sit in the chair, you wouldn't do it. So I'm not going to waste my time. But if I thought you would listen to me, I would tell you to sit in that chair. So I'm giving attention to details. How are people sitting? Are people comfortable? Like, you also don't look very comfortable. Next. Let me become absorbed in such service, never mind what it is, but let all other considerations be forgotten. So that's also a kind of mindfulness, but it also has to do with what psychologists call flow, which is a kind of samadhi, where you're so absorbed in what you're doing that you forget about everything else. You don't have divided attention. You know, if we're sitting in a Shastra class and we're making garlands or we're texting somebody, that's a very divided attention. So we want to give whatever we're doing at that moment our full attention, and everything else is forgotten. Only what we are doing at that moment. Let all other considerations be forgotten. Let me become absorbed in such service, never mind what it is, but let all other considerations be forgotten. So it doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter whether you're washing a pot, or you're changing a baby's nappy, or you're driving your car, or you're talking with a customer at work, or you're talking with your wife, or you're chanting your japa, whatever it may be. I always says, never mind what it is. It doesn't matter what it is. So this thing that I'm doing right now in this place is something, Krishna has some mission for me here. He has some purpose for me right here, right now, with these people. Somehow, there's some service I have here. It's not a mistake. It's not an accident that I am where I am, with who I am, where I am. There's some service I have to do here. Let me pay attention to the details. How will I find out the service? I pay attention to the details. And then I become absorbed in whatever service that is. I see paying attention to the details. It's like you're finding out what is your service. What is it Krishna wants me to do here? And I become absorbed in that thing in that moment. And I forget about everything else. And last thing, and only my desire to do the right thing best for Krishna's alone pleasure be my motive. So only my desire. I don't have any other desires. I'm not desiring some fruit of results. I'm not desiring some appreciation from other jivas. I'm not desiring some whatever. some money, and I desire, and that's my only desire, to do the thing best. So, to really do a good job, to be an expert, for Krishna's alone pleasure, be my motive. My only desire is that Krishna should smile. So, if one does that, then one will always feel spiritually enlivened. One will not feel irritated or disturbed. And if irritations come into the body, they'll just go in and go out. They won't stay. They won't affect us. Prabhupada says the advanced devotee doesn't see a difference between material and spiritual activities. Everything is spiritual. Maya means seeing that Krishna is not there. That's what Maya means. Maya doesn't mean a particular type of activity. Now, certain types of activity make it very hard to see that Krishna is there, therefore we don't do that. If you think of it that, you know, there's nothing wrong with dead animals, but we're not supposed to eat them. Because as soon as we eat them, we get covered by the mode of ignorance and we can't see Krishna anymore. But there's nothing wrong with eating, and there's nothing wrong with dead animals. You follow? Though there are certain activities that tend to make it hard to remember Krishna. So there are definitely certain activities that make it very hard to see Krishna. But ultimately, nothing is material. I mean, and those who are pure devotees, actually, they don't really have any restrictions on their activities at all. Like Garuda eats snakes. It doesn't prevent him from seeing Krishna. You understand? But for most of us, there are certain activities which, if we do them, we lose our consciousness of Krishna. But materialism means I don't see Krishna. I don't see the connection with Krishna. Our Prabhupada defines also, that's how Krishna defines Maya in the second canto. Prabhupada defines material happiness as I'm happy at someone else's suffering, and I'm distressed at someone else's happiness. And spiritual happiness is I'm happy at others' happiness, and I'm distressed at others' suffering. And that's Prabhupada's distinction. And Krishna's making the distinction, do you see the connection with me or not? Again, certain things we may say, hey, if I do this thing, I just can't see the connection with Krishna, it's impossible. And there are certain things that are so much in the mode of ignorance that if you do them, seeing the connection with Krishna is almost impossible for anybody. So we say, don't do those things. But everything's connected with Krishna. You understand?
Can I ask one question on this? When you said, when Krishna speaks to Uddhava, he also tells this line, telling that whatever you understand with your senses are not reality. Are not real. So, whatever understanding we have right now is only gathered through the senses.
And?
Does that mean that whatever understanding which we have, whether it is spiritual and material, that also becomes?
Correct. We cannot understand reality with material senses. What does material senses mean? What do we mean by material? Material means seeing without a relationship with Krishna. It's like saying, if I put a bag over your head, you can't perceive anything real. In a dream, you're not perceiving anything real. But if you wake up, you can. Purified senses can perceive the real. as soon as we have a consciousness of seeing the relationship with Krishna, then what we perceive is real. And it's not an off-on switch. To whatever degree we see the relationship with Krishna, to that degree it's real. To whatever degree we don't see the relationship with Krishna, to that degree it's not real. You don't think with the materialistic mentality that we see the world as it is, do you? I mean, even according to science, gross matter is mostly space. Do we perceive it like that? There's billions of living entities in this room. I don't perceive them. So much I don't perceive in a materialistic consciousness. I'm not perceiving reality. I'm perceiving a little bit of reality distorted. That's not perceiving reality. It's like this has a design on it. So suppose all you could see was one little square of this color. Are you seeing it? Well, yeah. But are you seeing it? No. No. Or if you have some bug, you have some ant or something sitting on the windowsill looking outside. Is the ant seeing? Well, yeah. Yeah, the ant is seeing something. Does the ant sing? No. Can the ant understand there's a road, and that road leads to another road, and that road leads to another road? If some dog sees the car driving down the street, I'm sure the dog thinks it's a big animal. So, you know, our perception in a conditioned state is so distorted. What we think is reality is just not reality at all. I mean, even the materialistic scientists know this is part of what's called the philosophy of science. The concept of the relationship between some objective reality that's not dependent on our perception and what we're perceiving. And to what extent, you know, philosophers in science who mentally speculate like crazy, and they'll talk about, is there even an objective reality? Does an objective reality that's independent of our perception even exist? And if so, to what extent are we perceiving it? You know, and nobody is sure at all as to whether or not, just because we have a collective experience, just because we collectively say this is a pillow and it's this shape and it's this. You can have a collective computer game. Everybody's on the same computer game and they're all seeing the same thing. But it's not what they think it is. You know, it's really just electrical impulses. It's not really the characters jumping around in some world, you know. You've seen computer games though? It's electricity, or it's ones and zeros, or you could say it's plastic and glass. It's something, but it's not what it appears to be, even though they're having a collective experience. I mean, my dreams are as real to me when I'm dreaming them as this is right now. When I'm in the dream, it feels just as real to me as this conversation is feeling. Yes, correct? Why do I decide that the dreams are not real and this is real? Because this is a shared experience. If I say, I had a dream that I went to your house and I was eating parathas, you'll say, but I did not experience that you were at my house eating parathas. So we decide that dreams are not real. We don't share them. And because we share them, we decide that is our only criteria for reality on a material level. There's no other criteria except that it's a shared experience, that we all agree we're sitting in this room in this address at this time. But why couldn't that be a group hallucination? Why couldn't it be a group dream? And the Shastra says that, in fact, that's exactly what it is. So just like a computer game where there's a group illusory experience. So there's something here, but what's here and what we're experiencing as being here are very different. So as a person as their consciousness becomes uncovered, they start to perceive the world very differently. they start to perceive energy very differently. They see Krishna everywhere. Premanjana Chuta Bhakti Vyanchanina. That's not just something poetic. They actually see Krishna everywhere. Even there was this guy who was he was beat up outside of a bar. He got in some kind of fight in a pub, a bar. And he got beat up and he got brain damaged. And after that, when he looked at the world, he could see geometric patterns everywhere. He ended up becoming a mathematics professor. Somehow it changed his brain. He could see things that we consider to be real, but that we couldn't see. What's the name of that movie? I saw this movie about this South Indian Brahmana. It was a true story. Yeah. What was the name of that movie? It was a really good. Did you see the film?
Ramanujan.
Yeah. Very, very good film. It was a really, really good film. I mean, it showed him wearing Vaishnav tilak and dhoti. And
he's actually a person who wanted to. Devatariman Prabhu, he mentioned one time that he became a devotee because he was seeing the serial in India. It was a long time back, there was a serial about Sri Ramanujan.
It became a commercial film. It was a commercial film. I saw it on an airplane. It's a commercial film. I forget, what is it called? Very good film. I really recommend it. It was very nice because it showed here's this highly intelligent, educated person wearing Vaishnav tilak, Vaishnav dress. It's very nice. And it showed the prejudice against him, the racial prejudice. But anyway, he could just see mathematical truth. He'd pray to the Lord, and he'd say, I just pray to God. And then I just see. And they were saying, well, you have to have the proofs. He said, I don't know what the proofs are. I just see the end. Einstein was actually the same way.
Yeah, it was revealed to him.
So it was just revealed. The end was revealed to him, and he had to have other people work on the proofs. He just saw.
Was that the case with Einstein as well? Mm-hmm.
Oh. Same thing. So they're seeing something I'm not seeing. These people are seeing something in objective reality that I'm not seeing. But it's there. So what do we see? I mean, if we take our view of reality seriously, we're fools. What does Krishna say? While the person is walking and talking and evacuating and opening and closing his eyes, he's actually doing nothing at all. But I think I'm sitting here talking to you, but I'm not. I'm just observing. I, the real person, is actually just observing.
So this eye is always awake, or
if you're really in the mode of ignorance, it's like you're not, you know, you're kind of awake. It's like this thick, thick blanket you're walking around in if you're in the mode of ignorance. So you're awake, but you don't know what you're doing. I mean, if you go deep into this, then you're starting to go into Gyan Yoga, which is a bona fide form of yoga. I mean, it's not like it's not a bona fide form of yoga. But if you go deep into this, then you eventually realize the self through study of philosophy, especially Sankhya philosophy. I mean, we have Sankhya philosophy. A big part of the Bhagavatam is Sankhya philosophy. A good chunk of Bhagavad Gita is Sankhya philosophy. It's not that we don't have any Gyan Yoga in our Shastra, we do. But yeah, if you get into Gyan Yoga and you start to see some idea, even intellectually, of the nature of reality, you become very detached. Like, why am I working hard and why am I involved in something that is not real? It's real in the sense that it exists. It's not real in the sense that it has no existence. But it's not real in the sense that what it appears to be and what it is are radically different. It's not just a little bit different, it's radically different. It's like a dream. In a dream it appears I'm going somewhere, I'm eating. Have you eaten food in a dream? I have eaten food in a dream. And when you're eating the food in a dream, you can taste the food. But it's just electrical impulses in the brain. But I'm experiencing it as eating food. I tell the story all the time. I was fasting one day from food and water, and I took a little rest. And in my dream, I was eating this big feast, and then I was drinking so much water. I was drinking cup after cup after cup after cup. And finally, in my dream, there was like a big jug, you know. In America, it'd be a gallon, like 4 liter jug, 4 or 5 liter jug, and I was drinking from the jug in my dream. And finally, in the dream, I said, something is wrong. I shouldn't still be thirsty. Something is wrong. I don't know what is wrong, but something is wrong. And then I woke up and I understood, it was dream water. So, I mean, it seemed like a very real experience when I was having the dream. It really felt like I was drinking. I could feel the water in my throat, like I was drinking water. But somehow my thirst didn't go away. I couldn't understand. Why was I having the physical sensation of drinking water, but the thirst wasn't going away? So all material life is like that. We seem to be having physical and mental sensations. But our fear and anxiety and longing and emptiness doesn't go away. It just stays. Isn't that strange? You get a house, you get a wife, a husband, you have a relationship with them, you have children, you have money, you have things, you have food, you have... So you're experiencing all these things as if your senses and mind are actually experiencing them. But there's no satisfaction from them. You're still thirsty. And so every once in a while a human being says, something is very strange here. Something peculiar about this world. And just because we're having a more or less collective dream, it's not exactly the same. If you ask everybody here what happened, everybody will give you a little different story. So we're not having exactly the same experience. But because we can say, oh yes, I was there, I saw you, you saw me, I saw you, we say, okay, that makes it what it is. But it's not what it is. We're all in a similar illusion.
Collective illusion.
It's a collective illusion. It's not exactly the same. Depends on the modes of nature the person is under. The combination of the modes gives everyone a slightly different experience. But it's similar enough that we can feel, okay, this is what's actually happening. But it's not. Something's happening. Earth, water, fire, air, ether interacting, or even on a more basic level, the modes of nature interacting with time. Or you could say Krishna is the universe and he's moving and he's digesting and he's seeing and he's... And we're just little cells in his body. I mean, think of the cells in your body. Do they know about you? Are they aware of you? You have heart muscle. In each heart muscle, there's a cell. It's a living being. It's a soul. Is that soul in your heart muscle? Does it know about you? What's its view of reality? And has all its other little heart muscle friends? Right?
Did you mean that each and every heart muscle cell has got a soul inside that?
It is a soul, of course it's alive.
So there is a soul inside that?
Yes, of course. Anything that's alive is a soul. So we're like little cells in the universal body. The whole universe is the body of God, and I'm like a little cell in the body of God, and I have my little job to do.
So So who is in charge of this mudi then? If there are so many souls.
Kshetramam chapimam vidhi sarva kshetra shibarcha kshetra kshetra kyayor jnanam yatta jnanam adhamam. I am and God is. I'm sort of in charge, not completely. Because I can't really, like, I don't really know what my heart is doing. It's kind of doing its thing. I don't even really feel it. I'm not even aware. I know because I've studied science in school and I passed my exam. But I don't actually know. I don't know, you know, what are my intestines doing? They're all busy. All the cells in my body are busy doing things right now. And then I have a lot of guests in my body also, other bacteria, fungus, yes? That are hanging out there. Correct? And some of them are helpful guests. Like I'm a guest here, I'm trying to be a helpful guest. Trying to do some good for my host. But I'm a guest, I don't live here. I'm not part of the house. And then you have harmful guests. Cause disease. So I'm a cell in the universal body. But I'm often just conscious of my own little world and my own little activities. And I'm not very conscious of the whole body. I'm not conscious of the big super soul, Kshira Daksha Yashu. Anyway, by meditating on these things, one should become detached and surrender and say, oh, why am I fighting to control an illusion? Why am I trying to be the master of an illusion? That's really silly. Like you see these kids mastering a video game and you just think, unless you're into video games, I suppose, you just think, that's really silly. What good does it do you to become the master of a video game? I have so many points. I have 30,000 points in my video game. What are you going to do with them? They're useless. All right, I'll give the example like Monopoly. You have Monopoly? You know what is Monopoly? You know? What is the game Monopoly? So if you say, you know, I have 5,000 reals in Monopoly. Who cares for that? What is it good for? It's only good in the game. It doesn't mean it. It can buy you little pretend properties. That's all. So when we see the nature of the world for what it is, then we just say, why am I anxious for the world? Let me be anxious for the reality. Is that all right? I think it's time for prasad. It's a very philosophical discussion. Yesterday was very practical. Did you get my book, The Essence Seeker's book? Characters also explore Jnana Yoga. They explore all the kinds of yoga.